Chapter 24. Prax. Prax sat in his cabin. For sleeping space on a ship, he knew it was large. Spacious, even. Altogether, it was smaller than his bedroom on Ganymede had been. He sat on the gel-filled mattress, the acceleration gravity pressing him down, making his arms and legs feel heavier than they were. He wondered whether the sense of suddenly weighing more, specifically the discontinuous change of space travel, triggered some evolutionary cue for fatigue. The feeling of being pulled to the floor or the bed was so powerfully like the sensation of bone-melting tiredness, it was easy to think that sleeping a little more would fix it, would make things better. "Your daughter is probably dead," he said aloud. Waited to see how his body would react. "May is probably dead." He didn't start sobbing this time, so that was progress. Ganymede was a day and a half behind him, and already too small to pick out with the naked eye. Jupiter was a dim disk the size of a pinky nail, kicking back the light of a sun that was little more than an extremely bright star. Intellectually, he knew that he was falling sunward, heading in from the Jovian system toward the belt. In a week, the sun would be close to twice the size it was now, and it would still be insignificant. In a context of such immensity, of distances and speeds so far above any meaningful human experience, it seemed like nothing should matter. He should be agreeing that he hadn't been there when God made the mountains, whether it meant the ones on Earth or on Ganymede or somewhere farther out in the darkness. He was in a tiny metal and ceramic box that was exchanging matter for energy to throw a half a dozen primates across a vacuum larger than millions of oceans. Compared to that, how could anything matter? "Your daughter is probably dead," he said again. And this time the words caught in his throat and started to choke him. It was, he thought, something about the sense of being suddenly safe. On Ganymede, he'd had fear to numb him. Fear and malnutrition and routine and the ability at any moment to move, to do something, even if it was utterly useless. Go check the boards again. Go wait in line at security. Trot along the hallways and see how many new bullet holes pocked them. On the Rocinante, he had to slow down. He had to stop. There was nothing for him to do here but wait out the long sunward fall to Tycho Station. He couldn't distract himself. There was no station, not even a wounded and dying one, to hunt through. There were only the cabin he'd been given, his hand terminal, a few jumpsuits a half size too big for him, a small box of generic toiletries. That was everything he had left. And there was enough food and clean water that his brain could start working again. Each passing hour felt like waking up a little more. He knew how badly his body and mind had been abused only when he got better. Every time, he felt like this had to be back to normal. And then, not long after, he'd find that, no, there had been more. So he explored himself, probing at the wound at the center of his personal world like pressing the tip of his tongue into a dry socket. "Your daughter," he said through the tears, "is probably dead. But if she isn't, you have to find her." That felt better. Or, if not better, at least right. He leaned forward, his hands clasped, and rested his chin. Carefully, he imagined Katoa's body, laid out on its table. When his mind rebelled, trying to think about something, anything else, he brought it back and put May in the boy's place. Quiet, empty, dead. The grief welled up from a place just above his stomach, and he watched it like it was something outside himself. During his time as a graduate student, he had done data collection for a study of Pinus contorta. Of all the varieties of pine to rise off Earth, lodgepole pine had been the most robust in low-G environments. His job had been to collect the fallen cones and burn them for the seeds. In the wild, lodgepole pine wouldn't germinate without fire. The resin in the cones encouraged a hotter fire, even when it meant the death of the parental tree. To get better, it had to get worse. To survive, the plant had to embrace the unsurvivable. He understood that. "May is dead," he said. "You lost her." He didn't have to wait for the idea to stop hurting. It would never stop hurting. But he couldn't let it grow so strong it overwhelmed him. He had the sense of doing himself permanent spiritual damage, but it was the strategy he had. And from what he could tell, it seemed to be working. His hand terminal chimed. The 2-hour block was up. Prax wiped the tears away with the back of his hand, took a deep breath, blew it back out, and stood. 2 hours twice a day, he'd decided, would be enough time in the fire to keep him hard and strong in this new environment of less freedom and more calories. Enough to keep him functional. He washed his face in the communal bathroom, the crew called it the head, and made his way to the galley. The pilot, Alex his name was, stood at the coffee machine, talking to a comm unit on the wall. His skin was darker than Prax's, his thinning hair black, with the first few stray threads of white. His voice had the odd drawl some Martians affected.
"I'm seeing 8% and falling."
The wall unit said something cheerful and obscene. Amos.
"I'm telling you, the seal's cracked," Alex said.
"I've been over it twice," Amos said from the comm.
The pilot took a mug with the word Tachi printed on it from the coffee machine.
"Third time's a charm."
"All right, stand by."
The pilot took one long, lip-smacking sip from the mug, then, noticing Prax, nodded. Prax smiled uncomfortably.
"Feeling better?"
Alex asked.
"Yes, I think so," Prax said. "I don't know."
Alex sat at one of the tables. The design of the room was military, all soft edges and curves to minimize damage if someone was caught out of place by an impact or a sudden maneuver. The food inventory control had a biometric interface that had been disabled. Built for high security, but not used that way. The name Rocinante was on the wall in letters as broad as his hand, and someone had added a stencil of a spray of yellow narcissus. It looked desperately out of place, and very appropriate at the same time. When he thought about it that way, it seemed to fit most things about the ship. Her crew, for instance.
"You settling in all right? You need anything?"
"I'm fine," Prax said with a nod. "Thank you."
"They beat us up pretty good getting out of there. I've been through some ugly patches of sky, but that was right up there."
Prax nodded and took a food packet from the dispenser. It was textured paste, sweet and rich with wheat and honey, and the subterranean tang of baked raisins. Prax sat down before he thought about it, and the pilot seemed to take it as an invitation to continue the conversation.
"How long have you been on Ganymede?"
"Most of my life," Prax said. "My family went out when my mother was pregnant. They'd been working on Earth and Luna, saving up to get to the outer planets. They had a short posting on Callisto first."
"Belters?"
"Not exactly. They heard that the contracts were better out past the belt. It was the whole make a better future for your family idea. My father's dream, really."
Alex sipped at his coffee.
"And so, Praxitiki, they named you after the moon?"
"They did," Prax said. "They were a little embarrassed to find out it was a woman's name. I never minded it, though. My ex-wife, thought it was endearing. It's probably why she noticed me in the first place, really. It takes something to stand out a little, and you can't swing a dead cat on Ganymede without hitting 5 botany PhDs. Or, well, you couldn't.
The pause was just long enough that Prax knew what was coming, and could steel himself for it.
I heard your daughter went missing, Alex said. I'm sorry about that.
She's probably dead, Prax said, just the way he'd practiced.
It had to do with that lab you all found down there, did it?
I think so. It must have. They took her just before the first incident. Her and several of the others in her group.
Her group?
She has an immune disorder. Myers-Skelton premature immunosenescence. Always has had.
My sister had a brittle bone disorder.
Hard, Alex said.
Is that why they took her?
I assume so, Prax said. Why else would you steal a child like that?
Slave labor or sex trade, Alex said softly. But can't see why you'd pick out kids with a medical condition. It true you saw a protomolecule down there?
Apparently, Prax said. The food bulb was cooling in his hand. He knew he should eat more. He wanted to, as good as it tasted, but something was turning at the back of his mind. He thought this all through before, when he'd been distracted and starving. Now, in this civilized coffin hurtling through the void, all the old familiar thoughts started to touch up against each other. They'd specifically targeted children from May's group. Immunocompromised children. And they'd been working with the protomolecule.
The captain was on Eros, Alex said.
It must have been a loss for him when it happened, Prax said, to have something to say.
No, I don't mean he lived there. He was on the station when it happened. We all were, but he was on it the longest. He actually saw it starting, the initial infected, that.
Really?
Changed him some. I've been flying with him since we were just farting around on this old ice bucket running from Saturn to the belt.
He didn't used to like me, I suspect. Now we're family. It's been a hell of a trip. Prax took a long pull from his food bulb. Cool, the paste tasted less of wheat and more of honey and raisin. It wasn't as good. He remembered the look of fear on Holden's face when they'd found the dark filaments. The sound of controlled panic in his voice. It made sense now. And, as if summoned by the thought, Holden appeared in the doorway, a formed aluminum case under his arm with electromagnetic plates along the base. A personal footlocker designed to stay put even under high G. Prax had seen them before, but he'd never needed one. Gravity had been a constant for him until now.
Captain?
Alex said with a vestigial salute.
Everything all right?
Just moving some things to my bunk, Holden said. The tightness in his voice was unmistakable. Prax had the sudden feeling that he was intruding on something private, but Alex and Holden didn't give any further sign. Holden only moved off down the hall. When he was out of earshot, Alex sighed. Trouble? Prax asked.
Yeah. Don't worry, it's not about you. This has been brewing for a while now.
I'm sorry, Prax said.
Had to happen. Best to get it over with one way or the other, Alex said.
But there was an unmistakable dread in his voice. Prax felt himself liking the man. The wall terminal chirped and then spoke in Amos's voice.
What have you got now?
Alex pulled the terminal close. The articulated arm bending and twisting on complicated joints, then tapped on it with the fingers of one hand while keeping hold of the coffee with the other. The terminal flickered, data sets converting to graphs and tables in real time.
10%, Alex said. No, 12. We're moving up. What'd you find?
Cracked seal, Amos said.
And yeah, you're very fucking clever. What else we got?
Alex tapped on the terminal and Holden reappeared from the hallway, now without his case.
Port sensor array took a hit. Looks like we burned out a few of the leads, Alex said. All right, Amos said. Let's get those bad boys swapped out. Or maybe we can do something that doesn't involve crawling on the outside of a ship under thrust, Holden said.
I can get it done, Cap, Amos said. Even through the tinny wall speaker, he sounded affronted.
Holden shook his head.
One slip and the exhaust cooks you down to component atoms. Let's leave that for the techs on Tycho. Alex, what else have we got?
Memory leak in the navigation system. Probably a fried network that grew back wrong, the pilot said. The cargo bay's still in vacuum. The radio array's as dead as a hammer for no apparent reason. Hand terminals aren't talking. And one of the medical pods is throwing error codes, so don't get sick.
Holden went to the coffee machine, talking over his shoulder as he keyed in his preferences. His cup said Tachi, too. Prax realized with a start that they all did. He wondered who or what a Tachi was.
Does the cargo bay need EVA?
Don't know, Alex said. Let me take a look.
Holden took his coffee mug out of the machine with a little sigh and stroked the brushed metal plates like he was petting a cat. On impulse, Prax cleared his throat.
Excuse me, he said, Captain Holden. I was wondering if the radio gets fixed, or there's a tight beam available, if maybe there was a way I could use some time on the communications array.
We're kind of trying to be quiet right now, Holden said. What are you wanting to send?
I need to do some research, Prax said.
The data we got on Ganymede from when they took May, there are images of the woman who was with them, and if I can find what happened to Dr. Strickland, I've been on a security-locked system since the day she went missing. Even if it was just the public access databases and networks, it would be a place to start.
And it's that or sit around and stew until we get to Tycho, Holden said. All right, I'll ask Naomi to get you an access account for the Rossi's network. I don't know if there'll be anything in the OPA files, but you might as well check them, too.
Really?
Sure, Holden said. They've got a pretty decent face recognition database. It's inside their secure perimeter, so you might need to have one of us make the request.
And that would be all right? I don't want to get you in trouble with the OPA.
Holden's smile was warm and cheerful.
Really? Don't worry about that, he said.
Alex, what have we got?
Looks like cargo door's not sealing, which we knew. We may have taken a hit, blown a hole in her. We've got the video feed back up. Hold on.
Holden shifted to peer over Alex's shoulder. Prax took another swallow of his food and gave in to curiosity. An image of a cargo bay no wider than Prax's palm took up one corner of the display. Most of the cargo was on electromagnetic pallets, stuck to the plates nearest the wide bay door. But some had broken loose, pressed by thrust gravity to the floor. It gave the room an unreal, Escher-like appearance. Alex resized the image, zooming in on the cargo door. In one corner, a thick section of metal was bent inward, bright metal showing where the bend had cracked the external layers. A spray of stars showed through the hole.
Well, at least it ain't subtle, Alex said.
What hit it? Holden said.
Dunno, Cap, Alex said. No scorching, as far as I can see. But a Gauss round wouldn't have bent the metal in like that. Just would have made a hole. And the bay isn't breached, so whatever did it didn't make a hole in the other side.
The pilot increased the magnification again, looking closely at the edges of the wound. It was true there were no scorch marks, but thin black smudges showed against the metal of the door and the deck. Prax frowned. He opened his mouth to speak, then closed it again. Holden said what Prax had been thinking.
Alex, is that a handprint?
Looks like one, Cap, but pull out. Look at the decking.
They were small, subtle. Easy to overlook on the small image.
but they were there. A handprint, smeared in something dark that Prax had the strong suspicion had once been red. The unmistakable print of 5 naked toes. A long smear of darkness. The pilot followed the trail.
That bay's in hard vacuum, right? Holden asked.
Has been for a day and a half, sir, Alex said.
The casual air was gone. They were all business now.
Track right, Holden said.
Yes, sir.
Okay, stop. What's that?
The body was curled into a fetal ball, except where its palms were pressed against the bulkhead. It lay perfectly still, as if they were under high G and it was held against the deck, crushed by its own weight. The flesh was the black of anthracite, and the red of blood. Prax couldn't tell if it had been a man or a woman.
Alex, do we have a stowaway?
Pretty sure that ain't in the cargo manifest, sir. And did that fellow there bend his way through my ship with his bare hands?
Looks like maybe, sir.
Amos? Naomi?
I'm looking at it, too.
Naomi's voice came from the terminal a moment before Amos's low whistle. Prax thought back to the mysterious sounds of violence in the lab, the bodies of guards they hadn't fought, the shattered glass and its black filament. Here was the experiment that had slipped its leash back at the lab. It had fled to the cold, dead surface of Ganymede and waited there until a chance came to escape. Prax felt the goose flesh crawling up his arms.
Okay, Holden said. But it's dead, right?
I don't think so, Naomi said.